So yesterday we started discussing this renormalization. And so this is a brief summary of what we did yesterday. So the key idea was that we want to, everything we are doing in the momentum space, that's where the Wilsonian renormalization comes from. So it's actually not the first, there was, previous to that, there was a renormalization in the position space, but it's not that successful. You will briefly study it next week. In your tutorial, but the momentum one is actually much more efficient. So that's why we are doing this momentum renormalization. And the idea is to split your integration into something which goes all the way to your cutoff, almost. It goes to lambda over b, and then another integral from lambda over b to lambda. And so the idea is to avoid these infrared problems which can happen for small momenta. And so for that, we split our fields into slow and fast. And so the idea is only to do the integration over the fast mode. So this is defined here. So you have your partition function, which is now integration over slow and fast. And so you, after you integrate out the fast modes, you are just left with an integral over the slow modes, but of some different action now, S tilde, which now depends only on the slow modes. And so it can be argued that this S tilde must have exactly the same form as the action S, except it may have different coupling constants, and now it only goes to lambda over b. Okay, so I have an integral over k, and then I change this guy to some new r2 tilde, and there was r before, so now it's r0 tilde, and there was u before, and so now it's r4 tilde. And so it must be of this form, and we will explicitly calculate what these quantities are today. So we will calculate what r2 tilde is, what r0 tilde is, and what r4 tilde is. And of course, they will depend on the original coupling constants on r and u and other things. Is there a question? Okay.
Yeah. So you say you can argue that S tilde has to have the same form as S.
Yeah.
How?
Well, because there's nothing else you can write down, basically. So if you write down any other terms, they will be irrelevant. So as long as you are interested in the relevant terms, so these are all the relevant terms you can write down. Okay. So yes, you can generate other terms by doing this renormalization, but you just don't care.
Okay. So by normalization, you know that those extra terms that you generate will just disappear again.
Yeah. Okay. And so the idea was, so we will explicitly derive this today, but then the idea was to bring this action S tilde to the original form. And for that, we had to rescale the momenta and we had to renormalize the field. And so in the end, you found that your couplings, the original couplings R and U, get changed, so now you bring the action to exactly the same form as you started with, but with new coupling constants R tilde and U tilde, and these are related to the quantities which appear in this action by this prescription here. So eta was simply a definition of saying that R2 tilde has this form, b is some fixed quantity, let's say 1.1, and so I can always find For any R2, I can always find eta so that this is true. And then, yeah, this is how you relate the new couplings to those which you find in this equation here. Okay, so now the idea today is really to do this explicitly and find what this S tilde phi slow is. Okay, and so for that, you just split that integral. You divide by z0 and you multiply by z0. So by definition, so this is our definition of S tilde phi smaller. So now E minus S tilde phi smaller. Okay, so now we are using the property that this S, the original S, has two parts. It has S0 part and it has interacting part. But the S0 part was very nice because it split into a sum of S slow, S0 slow plus S0 fast. So we can use that split. And so this will be given by minus S0 slow. And then we have this integral d phi fast, and then e minus s0 fast. So this is the split of s0. And then we have this interacting part as well. And that couldn't be split. So let's just write this for small and for phi large. But that, you cannot split that as a sum of two things. Okay, so this is when you compare whatever you have on the left-hand side with whatever you have on the right-hand side from the defined relation, what S tilde has to be. So now the trick is to divide it by Z0 and multiply it by Z0. So, okay, so now I put here Z0 and multiply by Z0, where I define Z0 to be an integral over fast mode just of the non-interacting part. Okay, so this is your definition, what you mean by Z0. Okay, so now if you look at the final expression, and you probably recognize it from your field theory course, so this is nothing else than the trace which we had at the beginning of the course in some sense. So what you are doing here is that this is your weighting thing, and this is your operator A, which you are trying to find an average of. So now 1 over Z0 is precisely that thing here, so it's like the partition function. So what this really is an average value of that operator A, which is this thing here, integral phi smaller, phi bigger. And so you are averaging over fast modes, but averaging also with respect to zero, as zero. It's not the full S, but it's just the S0 part. Okay, so I'll not write this zero, and I will not write this fast anymore. But this is precisely the definition what you mean by an average of some operator. And so you take, you know, the corresponding weight, and you divide by the corresponding normalizes at zero, and that's what you mean by that. And you have seen that in your field theory course, I'm sure. Okay? Or it's just trace of rho times A divided by Z. Okay? So now this is what we have. So now we can take a logarithm and write down what this S tilde really is. So from here, it follows that S tilde phi slow is just S0. And then the logarithm of this thing is minus a logarithm of E minus S interacting thing. And then also you will have that thing. So we divide it by Z0, but we also multiply by Z0. So that thing is still there, logarithm Z0. Okay. So Z0, well, logarithm of Z0 is just a number. You don't care about it, so let's forget about that zero over there. So this is the interesting thing. In fact, this is what you would naively expect. So this is the interesting thing. Okay. So how to calculate this logarithm of the average of an exponential? And for that, you use the cumulant expansion. So use cumulant expansion. So for any, let omega be a random variable, then you can show that the average of the exponential is just an exponential of the average. However, plus some corrections. And so these corrections are plus 1/2. And now you have omega square minus omega square, and then other terms in the exponential. Okay. So I'm just taking this from some mass book. Let's not try to prove it. Let's just believe it's true. Okay. So now applying to this formula here, you just find that S tilde phi is smaller. So S tilde phi smaller is just a zero phi smaller. And then, okay, so then I have minus logarithm and then of the exponential. So that just gives you the average of the S interacting part. So plus S interacting part. And then minus 1/2 and whatever I have here. So S interacting square minus S interacting square and plus other things. So this is how you calculate this new action S tilde. Okay. Where these averages are averages with respect to S0, and they represent an average over the fast modes. Okay, so far, are there any questions? So let's try to write down what this means explicitly. So you write down this S interacting explicitly. S interacting, well, it's U over 4 factorial. And then you have these four integrals, k1 to k4, k1 to k4. And then you have the products of four fields. But each field is small, slow, plus fast. Okay, so then you get a product like 1 plus phi bigger, k1 times, and so on, and to phi smaller, 4. Plus phi bigger for this thing, and then you have still the delta function there, 2 pi to power d, and delta k1 plus k4. So this is how your interacting S looks like. So now you have to, of course, you know, multiply this out. So you will have many terms. Okay, so how these terms look like, they have u over 4 factorial, k1 to k4, and then there's this delta function, and this is 2 pi to power d, still there, and then you have terms like, and you can group them into, you know, so you have something slow, and then you have something fast, and so on. So let's first write the terms which are slow, phi1, phi slow 4, so there will be a term like that. Then there will be all fast modes, 1 to phi fast 4. There's also such a term. And then there are these various products of slow and fast. Okay, so then there will be 4 products when you take 1 to be slow, so phi slow 1, and then you have phi fast 2, phi fast 3, phi fast 4. It doesn't really matter, you know, which k is which, so that's why this factor 4 is here. And then you have also 4 terms, well, this is the other way around, so 4 times phi now bigger 1, and then all the other are slow. Okay, so that's other 4 terms. And then you have terms where you have 2 slow and 2 fast. And so there's 6 of those terms. So plus 6 times, and then phi slow 1, phi slow 2, phi big 3, phi big 4. And that's it. Okay, so this is when you multiply it out, all these possibilities. So now what we are really interested in is calculating the average of S interacting. Okay, average over the fast modes. So in the end, you want to do an integral over the fast modes. Okay, so if I split these things into terms, well, this is term A, this is term B, this is term C, this is term D, and this is term E. So it's obvious that if I want to do an integration over fast modes, well, then I, for example, don't do an integration over term A. So term A stays as it is, and I don't do any integration. So, so when taking an average, over fast modes, while A remains as it is, because it's just slow, okay? So similarly, if I look at the term B, well, I'm taking now an integral over phi fast, and so I'll have only phi fast here. So in the end, I integrate out all the variables, and it just gives me a number which I don't care about. Okay, so term B gives a number, and I keep throwing numbers and stuff like that. All the, so not important. I'll throw away. Okay, so now terms C and D. Okay, let me deal with them a little bit later. So let's look at the term E. So now you're integrating over the fast modes, which means your integration kills this guy and kills that guy, and you have something which depends only on two slow modes. So in the end, after you average, it's something which still has two fields surviving, two slow fields surviving. Okay, so let's look at that, what it means. And again, I will not really derive anything here. I will just quote the result from your QFT course. So you know that the average of phi bigger 3, phi bigger 4 over the fast modes. Okay, so by definition, it's precisely what we mean by this average here. So it's 1 over Z0, 1 over Z0, and an integral d phi fast and phi fast k3 and phi fast k4. And then there is this exponential of S0. So e minus, and so now if you write down that explicitly, what it is lambda over b to lambda ddk 2 pi d, and then k square plus r phi k square. Okay, so this is what you need to calculate. But what it is, in some sense, is nothing else than your propagator from your. So this is some Gaussian integral here. And so you can use whatever you know from your field theory, how you do a propagator of the field theory. And so this is nothing else than the propagator of fast modes. So you can do this integral explicitly if you want to, but I'm sure you have done it in QFT1. Okay, so then this is just given by the propagator of this thing, and then 2 pi power d, and then delta k3 plus k4, where g0 is just a free field propagator for a scalar field. So this is our massive Klein-Gordon field. So g0 of k is just 1 over k square plus the corresponding mass, which is r. Okay, so just make that connection with QFT, and this is what it is. Okay, so really, yeah, I have a particle which propagates. It's created somewhere, goes somewhere, and this is precisely what this G0 describes here. And it's exactly the same calculation as you'd have done in QFT. Okay. So now it's obvious that because we already know how to deal with these things in QFT, so you can use Wick's theorem. So again, you know Wick's theorem from your quantum field theory course. So now you use it for a particular, I don't know, scale field theory. But Wick's theorem is true as long as you have, you know, the weight is some exponential, which is the Gaussian thing here. As long as you have Gaussian thing, Gaussian measure, then the Wick's theorem will be true. So then you know from the Wick's theorem that if you take, for example, the odd number of fields here, and you average over them, then you get what? You get zero. And if you take even number in principle, what do you get? So let's say I have four fields. How do I use the Wick's theorem? Huh? You get the contractions, and you can split it into always, you know, propagator of two fields times propagator of another two fields, and then, you know, take various variations of this. So Wick theorem gives you this. And then really, you know, Wick theorem is more general than you may expect from your quantum field theory course. It's just, you know, all you need is this Gaussian thing here. Okay. So now we know how to deal with these averages. So if we return back to our problem here, so we dealt with the term A, we dealt with the term B. So now if you look at term C and D, so we want to average over the fast modes. So we want to put like an average here. But you see there is three fast fields. It's odd number of fast fields. So this guy gives you zero after the average. If you look at this guy here, then there's only one fast field. So again, odd number of fast fields. So after the average, this term doesn't contribute. And so the only term which contributes is this one here. So only, so C and D, they give zero. Because there is odd number of fields. And so basically the only interesting one is term E. Only interesting is term E. Okay. Okay, so now, again, following the path of field theory, you know that if you can draw a picture, everything gets simpler. And so at this point, it is, again, advantageous to use the diagrammatic notation, basically Feynman diagrams, as you know from your quantum field theory course. So diagrammatic notation so you have two types of fields. You have slow fields and you have fast fields. So let me denote fast fields by a dotted line. And let me denote a slow field by the full line. Okay, so this will be very hard to distinguish on the blackboard, but okay, so that will be a thing here. Then your interacting part is basically a vortex of interactions of four particles. So the vortex here. So you have K1, K2, K3, K4. And then in the vortex stands this interaction coupling U. So this will be my shorthand for U over 4 factorial, and then 2 pi the power d. But you know also that the moment of all the particles have to be conserved, which is taking care of that delta function, which stands of this delta k1, k2, k3, k4. Okay, so that's taking care of that part. Okay, so now if you look at your interacting action, which is all these parts A, B, C, and D, and E. So, okay, so you can write it as a picture, so as interacting. Well, I have either four slow modes, so I have this, or I have four fast modes. Okay. Or I have four times plus four times, I can have one fast and three slow. So it will be that and then three slow. Or you have four times the other way around. So one, these are, and then there's only one of those. Or I have six times two slow and two fast. So this is how you would draw a picture for your interacting, for action interacting part. Okay. And so now you want to take an average of this. So you take S interacting here. Okay, and so what this average does, so it's an average over fast fields, and we said, well, it doesn't touch the slow ones. So this thing is still there. You know, you haven't done anything here. However, if you look at that, if you look at what happens if you're averaging over two fast fields, well, what you get is a propagator, you know, from one to another. So what effectively it does, if I have two fast modes, one going in here and one going there, so if you average over that, you actually connect these two lines so that you have propagating from here to there. Okay. So the averaging over the fast modes, basically what it does for you is that whenever you see fast modes, you want to connect them somehow. Okay. So this thing, no matter how you connect them, it will become something like this. Okay. Then you have plus four times, and again, you want to connect the fast modes. So, however, now there is only one fast mode, right? And you cannot connect one fast mode with itself. So this is four times zero because I cannot connect this guy. The same thing here. I will have three fast modes. I cannot connect all of them. So four times zero here as well. And so plus six times, and now I connect these two, and I get something like this. And that's the EPA diagram, which is interesting one. Oh, I just proved that there. So this is just, you know, so what you are doing is that you're just drawing pictures for your mass, right? But your mass told you, well, if I average over two fast modes, what I do get is a propagator in between them, and then this delta function tells me they actually, you know, end up in the same thing. So k3 is minus k4, so it's basically like a connecting them, right? So it gives me a propagator going from this guy to that guy. So
that's just a specific kind of diagram that you're looking at. And you just first drew everything of one vertex and then looked at the ones that occur.
Yeah. So this is your S interacting thing. And so you know in your notation that they're really connecting these two things. So if you have like an average of these things, so you average over K3 and then K4, this is precisely the shortcut for whatever you have written there. So G0, K3, 2 pi, power d, and delta k3 plus k4. Okay, so this is how thoughtful that should have been here. But now this is what we need to do. Okay, so let's calculate what this diagram really gives us. Maybe I'll put it a little bit higher. I need this thing. Right? So you want to calculate what is 6 times this diagram. Okay. But you can use your Feynman rules. Okay. So you have the vertex here. So there will be this u over 4 factorial, but you have 6 of those. So that's why this is 6 times u over 4 factorial. Then you still have these integrals over k1 to k4, all the way up to lambda. And then you read, so the vortex still has this 2 pi to power d here, and then delta k1, k2, k3, k4, but it must still be there. So 2 pi to power d delta k1, k2, k3, and k4. So I have this kind of this vortex here. Then I have k1, k4, k3. This is something screwed up. How did I denote it here? I have slow k2, so let's do k2 here, k3, and k4. Okay, so I have described the vortex. I have one incoming slow mode and one outcoming slow mode. So that will be phi slow k1, phi slow k2. And then I have this propagator here, which describes the slope. And so that propagator is precisely that thing over there. So it's g0, and now k3, k4. So k3, and then 2 pi to power d, and then delta function k3 plus k4. And that's it. So this is how you translate your picture to the actual mass. Okay. So now, of course, you can simplify this a little bit. So you have 4 integrals, but you have 2 delta functions, so you can actually integrate 2 of them. So first of all, this gives me u over 4. Okay, and then k3 plus k4 must be equal to 0. So these two things must be equal to 0. That means that k1 plus k2 must be equal to 0 as well. Okay, so let me introduce new. Okay, so I'll say that k1 is equal to minus k2, and I call it k, and then k3 equals to minus k4, and I call it q. And so if you do that, you can do these two of these integrals. So you have u over 4, and then all you have is just two integrals now, k and q. And then this phi slow of k, and then phi slow of minus k. And there's this g0 of k3, which is g0 of q. Okay, and that's it. So we used two delta functions, we killed two integrals, and this is what you get. So now it's beautiful because now you have two integrals, but basically you can split it into integration over Q and an integration over K. Okay, so let's write this as U over 4 integral over K, and then we have just phi K square. And then let's call the integral over Q just I. So I, where this I is an integral over Q of this G0 Q. Okay, so more explicitly, this is, so remember that this G0 of Q, so Q is fast here. So that means it's only non-trivial if Q is below lambda over B and lambda. So this thing is an integral from lambda over B to lambda of this G0Q, and G0 is whatever we define there, so it's R plus Q square, and it's an integral over Q, so it's ddQ over 2 pi to the power t. Okay, so now because here you have Q square, you can change the spherical coordinates. And so this is lambda over B, lambda, and so there will be some. So if you change to spherical coordinates, you basically have radial coordinate, and then you have the sphere, and you can integrate it over the sphere. So you get SD for the sphere, SD, and then 2 pi to power D, and then Q, D minus 1, DQ, over R plus Q square. Okay. So now we use the fact that B is, you know, it's bigger than 1, but it can be arbitrarily close to 1. So let's say 1.1 or even something. So this range is, you know, you are going from something huge to something huge, but they are only, you know, there is a small interval over which you are integrating. Okay. So for that, you can actually say that an integral from a to b of f of x, if this interval is rather small, f doesn't change too much in an interval, and you can write it as fb or fa, doesn't matter, b minus a. Okay, so let's do that here. So, okay, so this is equal to sd 2 pi to power t, and then you have the interval is lambda minus lambda over b, that's my interval, and then I evaluate this at f of b, which is lambda to d minus 1 r plus lambda square. Okay, so this is my approximate integral. And so now the last trick is to say, well, I can write this b, which is 1 point something small, as e to delta l, where l, so if I want b to be, you know, 1 plus something, this delta l is small. Okay, so then I have e to 0, which is 1. And yeah, so this will be fine. So now I can do the expansion of b. Well, I can do an expansion for small l. So I'll write this as 1 plus delta l plus other things. Okay. So now if you plug it here, so you have, okay, if you take lambda out of this, lambda to power t, and then minus 1 over b, and it's 1 minus delta l. Okay, so this is sd 2 pi to power d lambda d r plus lambda square, and then delta l. So that's what that integral is. Oh, very good. So now we calculate the contribution of the only picture of the only Feynman diagram, which actually, you know, can do something interesting in this approximation. So we are just taking the first term, the first perturbation. So we are taking that S tilde is S zero plus the average of S interacting was the first thing. It's precisely what I draw there. And so out of those diagrams, really this is the same as we had. So this doesn't do anything. These are zero. This is just a number which we throw away. And this is our correction, which we calculated here. Okay, so we are basically done. The result is, so we calculated this thing here. So maybe we can keep it here. Let's see what we need to do next. But let's see. So our S tilde phi smaller, well, is S0 phi smaller. So S0 is just 1/2, well, k square plus r. That's our S0, and then phi smaller k square, so this is over k. So that's S0. And then the average of S interacting. So S interacting is precisely this thing here, which is whatever we had before. So it's plus u over 4 factorial k1 to k4, and then 2 pi to power t delta k1 plus k4 f slower 1 to f slower 4. So that's that first diagram here. And then we have the non-trivial contribution from this diagram, which is plus u over 4, and then it's integral over k, phi smaller k square times I here. Okay, everybody happy? So really we're just putting these things together. So the first two terms is just this. Well, first term is this, and then S interacting has this contribution and that contribution. Okay, and so this is what it is. Okay, so in other words, you see that this is phi k square, and this is phi k square, so you can put the two terms together. And so you get that this is equal to 1/2 integral over k, and then you have k square plus r plus u over 2 times I, and the whole thing is phi smaller k square, and then you have the standard term u over 4 factorial and k1 to k4, and you know the rest. Okay, so now this is the result of the calculation, and you see that indeed this S tilde has precisely the form as advertised in this blackboard. So this is what we expected to have. And so this is what we get by an explicit calculation. So the integration is over slow mode, so it's precisely, the ranges are fine. So it goes only to lambda over b. And so now we can read whatever the r2 tilde is, and whatever the r0 tilde is, and whatever the r4 tilde is in this approximation. So,
what
yeah.
What did we do with the last term?
Okay, very good. So I haven't done this here. So that would be like a high order perturbation, which will bring you, I'll do it in 20 minutes. So far I have just done you know, this thing. So no perturbation, and then the first perturbation, and then, you know, I'll do the deal with the second perturbation a little bit later. Good question. Okay. So now this must be R2. So it's 1 times k square. So this is R2 tilde. R2 tilde. This is my R0 tilde. And this guy is my R4 tilde. Okay, so because R2 tilde is equal to 1, that's what we found by our calculation, and we define this to be b to power eta. So now b is bigger than 1, so eta must be equal to 0. So from here, you find that in the first perturbation, eta, the coefficient eta, is equal to 0. And then you have R tilde. Well, R tilde is B to T, B to 2 minus eta times R0 tilde. That's this formula here. Well, eta is equal to 0. So this is B squared. And then R0 tilde is R plus U over 2 times the integral. And finally, U tilde is B minus 4, well, B to 4 minus 2 eta minus D. So it's 4 minus D. 4 minus D, R4 tilde. But R4 tilde is just U. So this is B. 4 minus d, and then u. Okay, very good. So this is beautiful. So we really obtained the relation how the new coupling constants, r tilde and u tilde, are related to the old ones before we did that one process, r and u. Okay, and so these things are called the normalization group relations, recursion relations. So RG recursion relations. And they really tell you, you know, how to express the new coupling constants in terms of the old coupling constants. Are there any questions to this? It's very simple, isn't it? It's very simple. Okay, so now we have some algebraic relations. You know, R tilde is a function of R and U. U tilde is a function of R and U. Well, that's very nice, but usually it's better to put this into a differential form language. Well, this is differential equation language. And so for that, I'll use again this parametrization of B. So you do B is E to delta L, where you treat delta L to be small. So now let's take the first one. So R tilde equals to B square R plus U over 2 times I. Okay. So now this is R plus U over 2 times I. And then B square is 1 plus 2 delta L plus other things, if you are expanding in small l. Okay. Very good. So now what you can do is that you can multiply it and keep it to the right order. So you know that, well, okay, so let's do it. So this is equal to R is the first term. And then I have 2R delta L multiplying this guy with that guy. And then I have plus U over 2I. And then you would have U over 2I times 2 delta L. But it actually turns out that this U is small. So you don't have to include that term times delta L here anymore. So plus high order terms. And so now I put R tilde and R on the left-hand side and define dr over dl, which is R tilde minus R and delta L, and take limit delta L goes to 0. And so this must be equal to 2R, and then plus U over 2. And then I have to use the expression for I, which is somewhere. So the I is just a shortcut for this integral over the fast mode. And we found that it's actually proportional to delta L. So that's why it is small. OK, so we have that thing here. So now if you divide by delta L, it just gives us SD over 2 pi d, and then lambda d, and then r plus lambda square. OK, and so that's the first expression. And similarly, you would find that for u, so du over dl, which is u tilde minus u delta l, in this first order, you would find that it's 4 minus d times u. OK? And so this is the differential equation language for your normalization group relations. This is just called RG equations. And normalization group equations. Not in, well, in quantum field theory, yes, it is. Not in, if you deal with, you know, condensed matter systems or stuff like that, it's really given by the lattice size. So lambda is proportional to 1 over a. It's of that order. Yeah. So it's like a natural cutoff which you have because everything is well defined only on the lattice. You cannot take the continuum limit. So, yeah.
Okay, so
So in field theory, yeah, if you say that you can go to the continuum limit of the space, then yeah. Yeah, but of course it's probably not true. So probably there is still a natural cutoff even, you know, for space time, and you cannot divide space time into small blocks.
When D is equal to 2, I take the limit of lambda over 2 kT, and that gives me a 1 there.
Okay.
And then I'm safe.
I don't know. Are you? Maybe. Okay, so this is what we derive for our particular thing. But more generally, your RG equations will have form. So you have some coupling constant. So more generally, you have, you know, couplings X. Are couplings, and so then you have an equation dx over dl and equals to some right hand side, and so whatever stands on the right hand side is called a beta function. Okay, so this is called a beta function. And that's what tells you how these couplings get renormalized. That's you basically changing the energy, if you want. If you are zooming out of the system or zooming in the system, as you are changing the momentum, going from k to k times b. So this is how your coupling constants get renormalized. Of course, the fixed point corresponds to the case where your couplings no longer change. And so if your couplings no longer change, I have to have dx over dl equals to 0. So that corresponds to beta x equals to 0. And this is how you find your fixed point. It's very simple to do that. So a final remark on this is that if you look at the structure of these equations which we obtained, so we obtained 2r plus something, and then we obtained 4 minus d times that coupling here. So yes, dr over dl is 2r, and then du over dl is 4 minus du, and there will be some other corrections if we went to higher orders. So now this may remind you something which you have seen already. And so that something, anybody has an idea what that something is? So what is 2 for r? And what is 4 minus d for u?
Critical exponent.
Huh?
Some of the critical exponents.
No, not really.
4 minus d.
4 minus d was epsilon. Yeah. So it's a classical dimension of these couplings. So remember when we did the dimensional analysis, we calculated that the dimension of the coupling r is 2. And so dimension of coupling u is 4 minus d. That's what we calculated. And so generally, what you find is that this beta x, has always, the first term is given by the classical dimension of x times x, and then you have other corrections. And you will show that in tomorrow's tutorial, that this is indeed the case. So you can always guess how your, well, you always know how your beta function looks in the zeros order approximation. It's given simply by the classical dimension of the coupling times the coupling, and then there are higher order corrections. Okay, so you can all, you know, you can write down your beta function to the zero order. And so this is basically why this dimension, and this is the origin of relevance and irrelevance, and we'll discuss that tomorrow, so let me postpone the discussion. But it's really the fact that the dimension, the classical dimension of the coupling appears here, is why the operators are relevant or irrelevant, why you can call them, you know, why you can divide them just based on their classical dimension. Okay, so now we have half an hour to go beyond first approximation. So let me go now to the second approximation.
David.
Yeah.
But aren't we taking like the limit that we do this renormalization like in infinitely many small steps? So like, why do we need to go beyond first order? Or is it not first order in the step size? Can you just like remind me what order, what the thing that we're expanding it in is?
So, okay, so these RG recursion relations is whatever happens after one step. Right?
Yeah.
But in some sense, if I rewrite them as a differential equation, so now I can treat in some sense that L is not small anymore. I have a differential equation, you know, for R as a function of L. Okay? So now you can show that if I do this many steps, it means I can take L larger and larger. So in some sense, you know, the solution of these equations will be the complete solution of the problem. After each step, I get that RG recursion relation, but if I rewrite it as a differential equation, then I can solve it for any L. Okay, and so effectively, you know, that takes care of, you know, doing these steps many times. I don't know if that answers that question.
Yeah.
So so you will be thinking about, you know, a flow of couplings, how they evolve in some, you know, auxiliary time L. And then whether they flow to some fixed point or not, right? And that L can be arbitrary as long as I don't get well, yeah, I can take any L to get somewhere. And so that's, yeah, so that's why this is actually a good thing to do, whereas the RG recursion relations are sort of, you know, after one step, well, sort of. So here, I can really solve it for any L, and I can.
So the question was like, why taking higher orders in delta L will change the equations? Like, why would it matter?
No. So I'm not taking
in the coupling, right?
I'm not taking. So far, I just included these two terms here, but you have many other terms here. So this comes from the fact that you are doing this cumulon. Oh, it's not here anymore. How you are doing the cumulon expansion? So in some sense, you have to show that these terms really are smaller and smaller. And we will see that they are close to the, So you'll see that these, and there are other corrections here, but you can show that they get smaller and smaller. Okay. So just very briefly, so what do you expect is that, again, as in quantum field theory, you know that really the interesting diagrams are those diagrams which are connected diagrams. So then you have S square minus S integral square. Okay, so this is what we need to calculate. And so I'm telling you that this actually can be written. So we have S square now. So you have to combine S interacting two times, and you have to connect it somehow. Right, so I have now S interacting, so I multiply by another S interacting, so I'll have pictures which will have now many, many things here, and now I can connect various lines. But anyway, I'll have pictures which have two vertices. And so, for example, you can show that, you know, you have pictures like this. You have one vertex, second vertex, and then you have fast modes here. You can have pictures like that, 72 times, and then this is French, like that. So you have this. This are my two vertices here, and then you have pictures like this, where you have again the slow modes, and then two vertices on top of each other, which are slow, fast modes connected with each other. And so all these pictures here have two slow modes. So one slow mode coming in, one slow mode coming out. Okay, so in the end, what these pictures describe is a contribution to my, so if you look at, do we still have this here? Yeah. So the pictures which have, you know, one line coming in, slow line, and one line coming out, is precisely of this type. So those pictures which I have drawn here actually describe, you know, these types of terms after integrating over fast modes. And so they will just, you know, tell me what R2 tilde is and what R0 tilde is. Okay. However, what I would like to do is that if you look at this expression here for my recursion relations, I have that R tilde is, you know, R plus correction, but U tilde, this gives me just the basic dimensionality of U. So what I would like to find is a correction to U. So I would like to modify, you know, find the next step to U. But of course, that is described by this type of integral. So I need four slow things coming in or out. Okay, so these things, all these things actually contribute to, I don't know, integral over phi slow k square. That means they contribute to R0 tilde and R2 tilde. That means they contribute to R tilde. Okay, so I'm not interested in these diagrams because I already have first correction going beyond the dimensionality of the operator there. So now what you want to find a correction to this guy is creatures which have four external legs. And so there is, so you can, for example, write 36 times this guy. So now I have four external legs and two vertices. And then you can try other things, like, for example, 48, and then I have this thing, and the slow mode, fast mode, and then this thing here, and then other things. Okay, and so now these have four external legs, four slow legs, and they will contribute to you. So these are really, you know, they give contribution to you, tilde. Okay, so now it seems that you have to do, you know, you have to find all these diagrams, but it turns out that only this one is actually interesting. So why is that? So why, for example, the second one is not interesting? It's because of the conservation of the momentum. So if you look at the vortex here, there's a sitting delta function which calculates, you know, the momentum here, plus momentum here, plus momentum here, plus momentum here, and they must be equal to zero. So now you have one slow mode, and so these momenta are the same because you have the loop. So this slow momentum has to be miraculously changed to a fast momentum here, right? Because these momenta just, they go out, they come in, so it doesn't matter. But this is a slow momentum and this is a fast momentum. So that cannot conserve the momentum here. So this diagram does not contribute because does not conserve momentum. So this diagram is out. And you can try to plot other diagrams, and you will see that they are out too. Because, you know, you need to conserve some momentum. So the only thing which really contributes is this guy here. Okay? So let me calculate what that graph gives you. Okay? So we have that. And that. So we have the Feynman rules here. So maybe we can, okay. You already remember this by heart, so I can read that. So it's that diagram here. Okay. So I'll have momentum K1, K2, so now Q1, and then Q2, and K3, and then K4. And so in each vortex, there is a delta function sitting here. Okay. So that tells me that K1 plus K2 plus Q1 plus Q2 equals to zero if all of them are entering inside. At the same time, I have to have that K3 plus K4, but now I have taken these guys as going there, so now I'll take them with minus sign because they are going away. So minus Q1. Minus Q2 equals to zero. So that's the second delta function sitting in the other vortex here. Okay. So now what you can show from here, well, let's call Q1 just simply Q, and then Q2 from here, and then Q2 is K3 plus K4, K3 plus K4. Minus Q is from this relation here. Okay, and so now you can use your diagrammatic notation and you can write down what this thing actually is. So this will be, so you have now two vertices. Each vertex carries U over 4 factorial coupling inside. So now you have two of them. So you have U over 4 factorial square, and then you have an integral k1 to k4, and now I already used the two delta functions. Well, probably just one here. Okay, let me just write it down. 2 pi to power d, and delta k1, k2, k3, k4. Yeah, so I use two delta functions sitting there and there. And then phi smaller k1, phi smaller k4. So these are the slow modes which enter the thing. And then you have two propagators. You have propagator for this guy here, and then propagator for that guy here. So times I tilde is a different integral, which actually, you know, can be separated. And so this I tilde is just an integral lambda over b to lambda d dq 2 pi q. And then one propagator has the momentum q, which is this one, and the other one, q2, has this momentum here, k3 plus k4 minus q, or, okay, g0, k3 plus k4 minus q. Okay. Everybody happy so far? Okay. So now the important thing is to remember is that q is the fast momentum, and k3 and k4 are the slow modes which enter this thing. Okay. So if you neglect these k3 and k4, then nothing really happens because this is the dominant thing here. Okay.
Two.
Thanks. Okay, so you have now g0q and g0 minus q. But g0 is an even function of q. So what it actually is, you can approximate this as an integral from lambda over b to lambda d dq over 2 pi d g0 q square. Yeah?
I don't really see why you can neglect k3 plus k4 compared to q. But
yeah, so k3 and k4 are slow momenta. Okay, so.
But they can be arbitrarily close to fast momenta.
But typically they are not. Typically they are much smaller than q, right? So q is really, really big. It goes from lambda over b to lambda, but typically k3 and k4, you know, are much smaller than that. So yeah, so this is, you know, just to get some estimate of what this integral is. Otherwise, you can just put it there, and just don't evaluate it. But let's just, you know, get an estimate of what this could be, and then yes, you can sort of, you know, say, argue that this because otherwise this integral is of course dependent on k3 and k4. Right, and so I would have to put it here, and then I would have to integrate it over there, and it will be just big mess. So let's just do this approximation. But you are right. In principle, they can be, you know, close to q. Yeah. So anyway, so what this is an integral lambda over b. Okay, and so now again, I can change to polar coordinates. So we'll have SD over spherical coordinates, 2 pi power d, and then q d minus 1 dq, and the propagator is just r plus q square, the whole thing square because I have two of them. And again, doing the same trick that the interval is small, I can take just the value of this function and, you know, multiply it by the value of the integral, change it to delta L thing, and so what you find is that this is SD lambda to power d 2 pi d, and then r plus lambda square, square, and delta L. Okay, so this is what that integral here is. Okay, and so now you compare this guy is your R4 tilde and the corrections to, you know, the thing, and you see that your R4 tilde is this U basically times this integral here, which we calculated over here. And then you find what your U tilde is by taking B to 4 minus D times this R4 tilde, okay? So from here, I just deleted that formula, but just remember that U is R4 tilde B 4 minus 2 eta minus D. And then this R4 is whatever it was before. So it was just U. And then the contribution of this diagram, there's 36 of these diagrams. So it's minus 36 times. And then there is a U square term and times that integral. So U square over 4 factorial times I tilde. And times B 4 minus D. Our eta is still equal to 0. And that's it. So this is our next correction to the RG recursion relation for U tilde. And so the final step would be to go again to the differential equation form language. And so let me just write the final result. And so you can do this one line calculation by expanding B to E to lambda. And so the final result of the calculation is the following RG equation for the Ising model. dr over dl remains as it was. So this is beta function corresponding to my R coupling, and it's equal to 2r plus u over 2. And now I'll introduce a shorthand, this kd r plus lambda square, where this kd is just a shorthand for sd over 2 pi to power d, and then lambda to d. Okay, so this is just a definition of what kd means. So this is what we derived before, and it's still on that blackboard over there. And then now you have the improved RG relation for u as well. So let's call it beta u. And so previously we had just epsilon, well, 4 minus d times u. It was the term which we have over there. But now we have this correction here. And that gives you minus 3 half u square kd divided by r plus lambda square square. OK, and so these are the RG equations for our model. So having always the leading term, which you can just guess from dimensional analysis, so this you can guess and this you can guess, and this is the first correction to that, and this is the first correction to that. Questions?
So we have derived these equations. With this, we will get the stationary points of flow.
Yeah.
Once we get those points, where I go, how do I go back to my problem of my lambda functional, to connect with the Ising?
Well, so this describes your Ising model. right?
In what sense?
It's just a continuum. So what is?
So T is buried in the coupling right now?
I'm sorry?
For example, when I find a stationary point, how do I translate that to a TC? Like, if I remember.
You will see tomorrow explicitly. All this, you will see tomorrow how you can actually, you know, use all these results to say something about, you know, the critical point and about the quantities near this critical point. So it will be discussed tomorrow. But basically, yeah, this describes Ising model, right? Because we started with the Ising model, we calculated the corresponding partition function, we did Haber-Stratonovich transformation, we did it to a Landau's functional, right? So Landau's functional, Landau-Ginzburg functional, which we started with, really describes the Ising model,
right?
So now we are basically calculating this partition function of this Landau-Ginzburg functional. Right, so we are doing the calculation of the partition function, but what we are finding is that doing that integral step by step, we are basically finding that the couplings do change as you are doing these things, and so this doing by step by step is flowing closer and closer to the critical point in some sense.
So
the fixed point will be the critical point.
Yeah.
Fixed point of these equations will be the critical point. And so if I know how these couplings behave close to this critical point, I will know how physical quantities behave near the critical point. And you will see that explicitly tomorrow. So wait for tomorrow. So this was just the pain and, you know, whatever, the math you have to do. But this is the important result. And once you know this, you can start analyzing what's really happening, you know, at T critical.
Okay.
So you will practice this in your homework. So don't worry. Other questions? OK, so see you tomorrow. Tomorrow, triumph of renormalization.